All right, welcome to November 23rd on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I am your host, Joseph DeCristoforo, and one of the reasons why I do the show is because history is important. You see, one of humanity's flaws is trying to get somewhere not knowing where we came from. We just wind up going in circles and repeating mistakes of the past. So yeah, history is important. By the way, check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson and let me know what you thought about today's show. This is an interactive show and your participation is highly encouraged. Don't forget to hit the like button. I assembled this podcast from a tool shed in my backyard in La Mesa, California, right next to America's finest city, San Diego. If you're looking to move to the area or if you have any questions about real estate, check out TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. Because as a full-service Encinitas and San Diego real estate professional, Teresa works with buyers, sellers, and investors in real estate transactions. So yeah, check it out, TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. And now let's begin the show as we normally do with the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flag if we have one, and put our right hands over our hearts and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Booyah, America! And now on to today's headlines. Senator Boss Tweed is extradited from Spain. Plus, the world mourns for JFK. Revolution news. Washington starts getting intel from his Culper spy ring. And Love scores 34 points in the first quarter for the Cavs. Alright, so now here I go! 1876. Senator Boss Tweed is extradited from Spain. William McGeer Tweed, a.k.a. the Great Sachem of Tammany Hall, also led the Erie Railroad, the 10th National Bank, the New York Printing Company, the Metropolitan Hotel, and was the third largest landowner in all of New York City. If you've ever seen the 2002 movie Gangs of New York, you may recall the infamous Tweed Courthouse. During the 1850s, Tweed was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives at around age 30 or so, then the New York Board of Supervisors. How convenient! Tammany Hall was a bigwig of the Democratic Party in New York post-Civil War, and the Grand Sachem started controlling that too. He was now powerful enough to rig the vote for New York mayor, governor, speaker, and assembly, and would use the Dead Rabbits gang of Lower Manhattan, as well as other gangs, as enforcement. Boss Tweed manipulated competing fire station companies and law firms. Finally, he was arrested after hundreds of thousands of dollars were funneled from the city treasury to carpenters, plasterers, and other workers on the Tweed Ring projects. He was released after raising $1 million bail, and then, get this, elected to the state senate in 1871 and arrested again. This time, bail being sent to 8 mil. Of course, all Tweed had to do was embezzle the money, so that wasn't a problem either. Tweed's empire began to crumble as members of the Tweed Ring were getting convicted, and he was unable to pay off all the judges and juries. Tweed himself was convicted to 12 years, and was somehow allowed to visit back home outside of prison, and he escaped, fleeing to Cuba and then Spain. I'm sure he had a great time, but as it turned out, not only did the New York Times and Harper's Weekly run a negative press on Tweed, Spanish authorities actually recognized him from the Harper's cartoon which he was depicted, and the Grand Sachem was escorted back on an American warship and handed to authorities on this day in 1876. Desperate to get out of prison, he sold out close members of the Tweed Ring and was able to make a deal with prosecutors. But then, the Grand Sachem met his finale when fellow Democrat Samuel Jones Tilden became governor of New York and denied Tweed access to freedom and rebuilding his torn machine. Interestingly enough, Tilden would lose barely to Rutherford Hayes in an upcoming 1876 presidential election. Tweed lived the rest of his life and died on the Ludlow Street Jail on April 12, 1878. 1963. Here are the headlines. Dallas Morning News. Kennedy slain on Dallas Street. The Oregonian. Johnson pledges, I will do my best. Chicago Tribune. Assassin kills Kennedy. Lyndon Johnson sworn in. And just outside of the United States, Toronto Weekend Telegram, world weeps. Indeed it did. As church bells solemnly rang in Moscow, Soviet officials were greeted by great shock and denied that Kennedy's alleged assassin Lee Harvey Oswald had any Soviet ties. Just the day before, as terror struck in the presidential limo, and Dealey Plaza, often called the birthplace of Dallas, was in chaos, and Oswald slipped away calmly. First to his apartment to grab his pistol, and hopped on a bus at Elm and Murphy, about the same time the president began to lose his pulse. Meanwhile, First Lady Jackie was freaking out at the Secret Service after watching the lover of her life's existence here on Earth come to an end. But ultimately, the news of her husband's death would be delivered to her by Dr. William Clark. Bobby Kennedy got a phone call from J. Edgar Hoover. LBJ was briefed by Kenny O'Donnell, and Jack Ruby, the man who would assassinate the alleged assassin Oswald, heard the news from Walter Cronkite on CBS, just like the rest of America. As Lyndon boarded Air Force One, the hunt was on for a white male, approximately 30, slender build, height 5'10", weight 165 pounds. Police officer J.D. Tippett found Oswald, but Oswald drew his revolver and shot and killed Tippett. 8 blocks later, the sirens were sounding, so Oswald ducked into the Texas movie theater, running right past the clerk without even paying for a ticket. Because, you know, that isn't obvious or anything for a man who totally fit the police description. Oswald found a seat in the theater that was playing the movie War is Hell when the clerk alerted the police. And yeah, lights went up in the theater, police surrounded and handcuffed Booth, and Booth kicked and screamed on his way out. But that was the day before. Now the news continued to hit the world. In Vienna, a tremendous outpouring of grief was reported. The city of Berlin basically closed down. Thousands gathered and mourned in the streets of Paris, at an Anglican cathedral in Bombay, and thousands more in Yemen, Sudan, Tokyo, not to mention countless countries in Latin America. 1778. Washington begins receiving intel about British movement from the Culper spy ring. During the summer of 1778, the British abandoned Philadelphia and concentrated more troops in New York. The Continental Army moved out of Valley Forge, and Washington's army fought Sir General Henry Clinton's army in a stalemate at the Monmouth Courthouse in New Jersey. Meanwhile, as the French and Americans, who signed a treaty earlier in the year, were beaten by the British in Newport, Rhode Island. In order to win this war, Washington would need a lot more than just the help of the French. He would need a network of spies to make battle plans. Major Benjamin Tallmadge, or John Bolton as his code name was, communicated directly with Washington, who had come up with the name Culper after his old stomping grounds in Culpeper, Virginia. Culper Sr. would be Abraham Woodhull, and Culper Jr. would be Robert Townsend. By the way, tomorrow's Townsend's birthday, so I'll get more into detail on Culper Jr. Caleb Brewster, Anna Strong, and Austin Rowe, and a handful of others would be involved in getting British troop information to Washington. It was on this day in 1778 that Washington first received word from Woodhull with information on British troop movement in Long Island, as well as a request to get paid for his expensive and dangerous services. Washington was impressed with Woodhull's work and supposedly wanted to have Tallmadge arrange a face-to-face meeting, a move which was tactically dangerous and unnecessary, but the information was very helpful. The Culper spy ring would be a game changer in many aspects of the American Revolution, from the Benedict Arnold betrayal of West Point, to economic warfare waged by the British, to Hessian activity in Trenton, all the way to the surrender of Cornwallis in Yorktown. It's unlikely Washington would have defeated the British without the Culper spy ring. During the early phases of it in late 1778, Tallmadge, at one point, was ordered to hand his letters to General Israel Putnam instead of Washington directly. Interesting choice, since many historians blame Putnam for losing Long Island to the British in August 76. But whether or not he actually knew exactly what Culper was unknown. Back in New York, in December of 78, Tom Ange recruited and Austin Rowe hired innkeeper and postmaster Jonas Hawkins from Woodhull and Setauket away from the city to Tom Ange Bolton. At first, Woodhull wasn't comfortable with one more person getting that deep in the Culper ring, but since Washington would be getting his messages 1 week from Hawkins' delivery as opposed to 2 weeks from Woodhull's, it worked out. The Redcoats were ruthless in New York City and Long Island, and Woodhull expressed the urgency of a continental victory there. As he wrote to Washington, quote, "They have no regard for age, sex, Whig, or Tory," unquote. But now, Washington would get his intel. Map jar Sir Robert Erskine and his 2,500 men and three redoubts at South and East Hampton, as well as movement at Canoe Place, flat bottom boats being built. There was Colonel Howlett of the 3rd Battalion at Lloyd's Neck, and the Queen's Raiders of 300 foot and light horse at Oyster Bay. And with that information, Washington would be able to plan his strategies. 2016, Love scores 34 points in the first quarter for the Cavs. Kevin Love, whose Uncle Mike was one of the Beach Boys, got real close to Klay Thompson's record for the most points in a quarter. That would be 37 in the third. But on this night, Love's record would be in the first 12 minutes in what would become a 137-125 point victory over the Portland Trailblazers. Love was unstoppable. 14 from the field, 8 from 10 from downtown, 4 from 4 from the line. So that is all, my friends, for November 23rd on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I'm your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Check out the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com, as well as the Facebook page. Let me know what you thought about today's episode. For instance, what about the Kennedy assassination? Are you of age to remember that? If so, what was your reaction? What about that story on Boss Tweed? Are there any parallels you can make to today's politics? I want to hear all about it. Did you see that Cavs game way back in 2016? It's pretty fun to YouTube. And be sure to check out tomorrow's episode. We'll wish a happy birthday to Zachary Taylor. Plus, an airplane hijacker steals 200 grand from the passengers and parachutes out into a hurricane. So don't miss that. It's hilarious. So until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. We'll see you tomorrow.